How many people around the world do you think live with migraine? 1 million? 10 million? 100 million? The answer is 1.3 billion people. It's no surprise then that migraine is the most common complaint encountered by neurologists in day-to-day practice. Today, we'll be talking about the impact of migraine on patients' lives.
This is Progress in Mind Resource Center, sharing the latest insights and expert views in psychiatry and neurology.
Migraine negatively impacts on virtually all aspects of life and is the leading cause of years lived with disability among people aged 15 to 49 years. Up to 2% of the world's population live with more severe forms of migraine, yet migraine is underdiagnosed and undertreated. We asked Professor Don Buse of the Albert Einstein College of Medicine in New York what the challenges are that patients try to deal with on their own before they seek help from a specialist.
We know that the journey with migraine to diagnosis, to optimized care, can be quite a long journey. And we know this both from research and from hearing from each individual patient. In research in the United States, only about half of the people who meet criteria for migraine, which is about 40 million Americans, have recently sought healthcare for migraine. So if we think about getting to optimized care as a cascade, there are steps that must happen along the way. First, someone needs to talk to a healthcare professional, because the migraine-specific treatments are by prescription only, as are the majority of preventive treatments. So we lose about half the people who are not actively seeking healthcare. Why not? Perhaps they don't know they have migraine. Perhaps they know it, but they feel hopeless that there are not treatments that can help. Or perhaps they feel stigmatized about the condition and don't want to talk about it. After someone does seek healthcare, then they need to be accurately diagnosed. Again, because to get to migraine-specific medications, also to talk about preventive treatments, be they pharmacologic, be they behavioral, be they neurostimulation, we really need to have that diagnosis. And surprisingly, not all people who talk to healthcare professionals about migraine are accurately diagnosed. So we can see that there are many places where we lose patients along the way. And in fact, less than 10% of people with migraine in the US, at least, make it through all of those steps to get to an optimized treatment plan. So we know we still have a long way to go. We know from research that each of these steps can take a long time. In fact, it's often more than 10 years when someone first experiences migraine to when they seek medical care and receive a migraine diagnosis.
10 years is a long time to wait for a formal diagnosis. What symptoms could patients be experiencing for that long?
Migraine is a chronic disease with episodic manifestations. Headache is usually the main symptom and can last between 4 to 72 hours if untreated. The headache may be unilateral or one-sided, may have pulsating pain, may be aggravated by movement or activity such as walking up the stairs. Migraine attacks in the headache phase can also involve nausea, with or without vomiting, photophobia, which is sensitivity to light, phonophobia, sensitivity to sound, osmophobia, sensitivity to smell, and other associated symptoms such as cognitive impairment. Migraine attacks can include four stages: a prodrome, an aura, the headache phase, which is the pain and the accompanying symptoms I just mentioned, and a postdrome. In light of all four potential phases, a migraine attack can last for several days and severely incapacitate someone in their ability to function for an extended period of time.
Could any of these stages in particular provoke someone to see a clinician?
An attack may include all of these stages or just some, and this may vary from person to person and from attack to attack. About 1 in 5 people will have aura with migraine, although they do not always have an aura with every attack. And the aura phase is defined as the experience of focal neurologic features. They are most typically visual in nature, such as seeing flickering lights, spots or lines, losing a portion of the visual field. But other senses can also be involved, such as a sensory aura where someone may experience numbness or feelings of pins and needles. Someone may also lose the ability to form words. And in fact, there was a news reporter on the air several years ago who had an aura and was unable to speak and actually kind of came out in gibberish. And you could tell from her face that it was quite disturbing and scary for her. The aura can be very disturbing for people if they haven't had it before, they don't know what it is. It often drives people to seek care and may send them right to the emergency department.
There is clearly a significant burden from these symptoms. What have your own studies uncovered about the impact of migraine on patients' quality of life?
Migraine is commonly divided into episodic migraine and chronic migraine based on the number of days per month that someone experiences headache. We can also further divide migraine into smaller frequency groups, such as low, moderate, and high frequency episodic migraine, and low and high chronic migraine. And we've been doing this in some of our recent research to show that the increased burden, disability, comorbidities, and costs actually increase with every day per month that someone has additional headache days.
Are these experiences the same for everyone who has migraine?
They're likely both external and internal variables, such as resources, be they financial, be they family support, be they societal, and internal variables such as psychological traits, be they resilience, be they psychological comorbidities, be they stigma, which interact with how migraine impacts individuals. Migraine can affect anyone, regardless of age, sex, race, or ethnicity. But we do know that migraine prevalence is highest in women. In fact, it's 3 times more prevalent in women than in men. Migraine is most common in young adulthood to midlife, a time when people have the most responsibilities, the most challenges, the most going on in their life, a time when people are completing educations, starting families, and building their careers. So while the prevalence of migraine varies by age and sex, it also varies by socioeconomic status. And in fact, it tends to be a bit higher in people of lower socioeconomic status. We don't know the causation or directionality, of course, of that relationship because it's not possible to study in any type of experimental way. But we do know that people of lower socioeconomic status may have fewer resources and less access to high quality care.
So it is clear that migraine can be a constant burden to patients from all walks of life. In the light of this, it's not surprising that patients use all the ways they can to manage and prevent attacks. But where treatment management does not provide the relief the patient seeks, it can impact their quality of life even further. When too much medication is used too often, the treatment can actually worsen the situation. In the CAMEO study of about 17,000 migraine patients, nearly a fifth reported regular overuse of acute migraine treatment for more than 3 months. And around a third of those patients were experiencing medication overuse headache, or MOH. Professor Buse, what is MOH?
Well, I'd like to start by differentiating medication overuse and medication overuse headache. These are both defined in the ICHD-3. The definition of medication overuse is acute medication use of combination analgesics, ergotamine, or triptans on 10 or more days per month, or simple analgesics on 15 or more days per month, on average for 3 or more months. And so you combine all the days of acute medication use if people are using from multiple classes to get to that threshold to say that someone has acute medication overuse. Now, medication overuse headache, as defined in ICHD-3, is headache occurring on 15 or more days per month, developed as a consequence of regular overuse of acute medication. And again, that's the 10 or more or 15 or more days per month, depending on which class, for more than 3 months. And in the ICHD-3, it specifies that it usually, but not always, resolves after the overuse is stopped.
It must be difficult for a patient to hear that a treatment that helped them initially is the reason their headaches are getting worse.
This can be a big stumbling block in our relationships with patients. The name itself, medication overuse headache, or medication overuse, really carries stigma. It very much sounds like we are blaming the patient for causing their migraine, which of course we are not. Also, the irony is that they're doing something to try to treat it. So giving them this label can be incredibly disheartening, frustrating, and confusing for patients. We also give patients confusing advice, such as in the case of triptans, where we say, be sure to take this medication early in an attack, but do not use it too often. As many people listening have probably heard their patients say, this is a real source of confusion for our patients.
The COVID-19 pandemic has thrown up many challenges in healthcare. Has the pandemic increased the impact of MOH on patients?
We all know that part of the containment strategy to slow the spread of the virus was to have massive shutdowns or closures or eliminate outpatient or optional procedures. And one thing that really impacted was people living with migraine who had been on preventive interventional treatment regimens, which need to be administered in office by healthcare professionals, were in some cases not able to get those and either missed doses or changed to another medication, another treatment plan altogether. We know from research, again, around the world, that this caused increase in headache day frequency, increase in migraine attacks, increase in stress, and also might have driven people to use or overuse acute medications or other treatments that they might have not had to rely on if they had been able to maintain their regimen of their interventional prevention strategies. Interestingly, most of the published research on the effect of the global pandemic on people with migraine also includes some positive impacts. Specifically noted are greater access to healthcare via telehealth, greater control over one's schedule, especially stemming from the ability to work or attend school from home for some people, and a reduction in the number of social pressures and social obligations that one usually has, which many people living with migraine reported was a bit of a relief.
We've heard now how migraine adversely affects people and how medication overuse can exacerbate this. So how can we identify the patients most at risk of high disease burden? Every patient is different and each one leads a different life. But what are the warning signs that patients could be starting to show signs of MOH?
It's important that we all stay alert for the signs of medication overuse, which is, again, acute medication use of combination analgesics or ergotamines or triptans on 10 or more days per month, or simple analgesics on 15 or more days per month for 3 or more months. One thing to consider is that this combines not only prescription, but over-the-counter medication. So we need to really ask patients about everything they're using and then figure out the total days per month that they used any acute treatment.
Are there any particularly troublesome medications to be aware of?
There are some that are associated with worse outcomes, such as opioids, barbiturate-containing combinations, caffeine-containing combinations, and other non-migraine-specific over-the-counter medications.
So if a clinician suspects a patient's migraine attacks may have a particularly high impact on their daily functioning, how can they objectively assess this?
Patient-reported outcome tools, or PROs, are certainly helpful in migraine management, and they can be used at a variety of levels. They can support diagnosis and screening. They can facilitate initial management plan decision-making and optimization and support ongoing monitoring. The MIDAS, HIT-6, and MSQ are three of the most commonly used and well-validated instruments. The MIDAS, or Migraine Disability Assessment Scale, is comprised of 5 questions which ask about lost productivity and time in work, school, family, social, and leisure areas, and higher scores show greater disability. The migraine-specific quality of life is a longer instrument, and it actually goes in the opposite direction so that higher scores are desired and show better quality of life across 3 different role areas.
When a patient at risk of unacceptable burden or medication overuse is identified, there are strategies clinicians can adopt to try to mitigate the risk.
So when we're thinking about treatment plans, we want to look to the migraine-specific acute medications, as well as any additional acute treatments that might be needed, such as an anti-nausea medication. We also want to consider adding preventive elements if those are not already in place, or augmenting those that are in place. Those can be pharmacologic, behavioral, neurostimulation, and we also want to examine those lifestyle habits and make changes where necessary. We really want to emphasize to patients that these lifestyle habits can make a real difference in their migraine management. And again, those are going to be sleep hygiene, exercise, stress management, and healthy nutrition, staying hydrated. But all in all, the most important thing is that we normalize that this can happen, that we understand as healthcare professionals that as their headache day frequency increases, certainly they will be wanting to take more medication. They'll be thinking about taking more medication to manage their pain and resolve the symptoms. And really, this is the right time to intervene and talk about other treatments.
And how can we support patients on their new treatment journey?
We also need to evaluate associated disability, as well as depression, anxiety, and quality of life. And in some cases, we may also want to refer to a pain or headache psychologist for cognitive behavioral therapy, biofeedback, and relaxation training to really enhance our treatment outcomes. Research has also established that when withdrawing from a medication, adding behavioral therapies for support can lead to much better outcomes, both in the short term and in the long term.
In today's episode, we've been looking at the impact of migraine on patients' day-to-day activities. With the help of Professor Don Buse, we have found out how patients feel about their migraine and the burden it brings. We have heard how constant attempts to control migraine can lead patients down the road of medication overuse and how that can make matters worse. Finally, we have explored the options open to clinicians to identify patients at particular risk and reduce the burden of migraine on their lives. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Progress in Mind Resource Center podcast, sharing the latest insights and expert views in psychiatry and neurology. We invite you to explore further resources here on our website,